Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so excited today because we have Johnson Adeyeju, who focuses on helping great employers hire bright and diverse talent. So I'm going to welcome Johnson.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you say, my name's Johnson. I work for an organization called Bright Network. And essentially what we do is we have a network of 200,000 students and graduates, and we connect them to the leading employers across the country. So anyone from sort of Deloitte, EY, all the way through to your kind of smaller companies like Monzo. And really the focus of our work is really trying to help those organizations employ underrepresented groups. So non-traditional groups like Black, Asian and minority ethnic background, or women in technology, for example, and more recently, really focusing on, you know, those young people that come from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. That's essentially what we do. We kind of help and support that network of students and graduates, and then in doing that, we're able to then connect them with leading employers.
Brilliant, Johnson. And today is one of our very first podcasts for Real Stories, and I want to know a little bit more about you and why you got into this, because I want to come to the heart of what your story is and what challenges you had. So what led you to do what you do?
Yeah, well, I think it probably sounds a little bit cliche in that I think probably rooted very much in my childhood experiences. So I was left with a nanny actually when I was about 2 years old, and she raised me with her family until I was about 10. So essentially I was in the care system up until that point. And you know, I'm a Black heritage, but this family was a white family. And I think growing up in a circumstance like that certainly did have an impact on me thinking about difference, thinking about how people who don't have maybe kind of traditional kind of roots into work, etc., can really have an impact on their lives. And then I think then going on and being quite lucky to get into a good university, looking around me, I sort of noticed that I was one of the only Black people on my course. You know, I studied English literature at university, and it just really shocked me that that could be the case. So very much from the beginning, when I kind of graduated from university, I wanted to do something that would make a difference to that, and would encourage people from non-traditional backgrounds to do well. So that is the kind of root cause, I think, of, you know, why I do this type of work.
You know, that's really, really interesting, because as you said that, you know, I just thought to myself, from 2 years old, you know, you're just from a very young age, you come into a family and there's people that don't look like you. That must have been very challenging. But can I ask you one more question with regards to that, and then we'll move on?
Yeah, sure.
So what happened with regards to your parents at two? Was it that What happened with regards to parents at 2 years old, while you ended up in the care home?
Yeah, good question. So yeah, I'm of Nigerian background, and I was born in Nigeria.
Okay.
My dad actually came over here to study just before I was born, and he actually didn't know that my mum was pregnant. I guess a couple years later, it was time to kind of introduce me to my dad. And the plan really was to eventually move my whole family over to the UK. But when my mum brought me to kind of meet my dad, he sort of had this massive change of heart about actually wanting to kind of stay in a relationship with my mum. And she'd already had my older brother and sister. Mm. And so he basically told her that it was kind of over, and, you know, kind of taking an equitable approach to it, she sort of said, well, we've got three children. I can't look after all of them. So, you know, it's going to be your responsibility to look after Johnson. And at the time, you know, while she was here, she had been kind of like working in McDonald's and had found me a nanny. Mm. And So instead of my dad going to like pick me up from this nanny, he just never did. And so that's kind of the circumstances in kind of which I ended up with that family. And then kind of later on, my dad, I guess social services kind of got involved. Whilst I was at school, I wasn't necessarily eating as much as I should. So that kind of provoked them to get involved. And at that stage, then my dad kicked back into action because technically he, you know, I was his responsibility. And then he basically came in the middle of the night, picked me up, and then I started living with my dad again. And then kind of further down the line was reunited with my biological mum as well. So yeah.
Wow, Johnson, what a story. That is a story. Wow. I want to say thank you so far for being so honest and telling me this story and openly speaking about this. But I suppose when you speak about your story, I always feel it helps other people. For example, I always say if Maya Angelou didn't write that book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, then it wouldn't heal people. So I suppose it's important to share your story. But moving on from that, my next question for you is, I want to ask you, what was your most positive memory of childhood growing
most
up? We've got to look at the positives as well as look at, you know, if you've experienced. And I do believe even out of every experience you have that may appear negative, there is a positive within that if we look at life in a different way.
Do you know what? I think, even though I absolutely loved living with Sue, who's the kind of nanny who looked after me and her children, who I saw as my brothers and sisters, and, you know, she was my mum, I think what a really kind of key moment for me was actually meeting my older brother and sister, and just very quickly we became, you know, like bonded. So I had no idea, you know, that I was Nigerian. And they very much brought that culture over when they came, and we played like Nigerian games, and we would eat like the food together and sit around and eat the food together. And I just remember being like really incredibly like happy at that point, because it was, you'll know from kind of African and West Indian culture, it's so enjoyable, you know, the music, the dancing, the eating and stuff. For me to all of a sudden get an introduction into that world, that was a really... Yeah, I've got very fond memories of that time.
Yeah, no, that's good. That sounds like you do. So have you actually been to Nigeria? Have you travelled there and seen family?
So, ashamedly, no. But actually, you should ask, because I turn 30 this year, and in December for 3 weeks, I am going home. It feels very much like a homecoming, because I have 65 first cousins. So, I am... going to be a really overwhelming experience, but I finally plucked up the courage to kind of just do it and fully embrace it. So this is the year.
Oh, that's excellent. That's brilliant. I think it's a great time as well, because I mean, I've not been to Nigeria, but that's not my background's of Jamaican heritage. But when I first went to Jamaica, it was an amazing experience just to kind of see people of colour in really kind of great positions, because the majority of people in Nigeria will be people of colour. So you'll see lawyers, doctors, all these sorts of things that really I feel can affect us in this Western world, or especially living in England, where sometimes you're surrounded by lots of Caucasians, you know, in certain job titles. And there's not, we see us, and there's a lot of people doing very well in this country, but because of something like, I think it's something like 11%, if you break it down, then we don't see enough of us. And I feel the more role models we see, the better it is. And that's probably, I don't know if that's probably why you do what you do, because it sounds amazing that you've thrown your life into supporting the BAME community, you know, and people who come from a kind of a poorer demographic, to, you know, get into the workplace of doing certain jobs, you know. So how does that actually work? Tell me a little bit more about that, because I can totally now understand why you do that and why you're passionate about doing that. But how does it work? Have there been much struggles with that? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Do you know what? I think it's... it's, I've been kind of lucky in that I, you know, I started in this role about a year ago, and it's not been that difficult because, as you'll probably see, you know, in the news and in the media, I think diversity and inclusion and belonging is very much like on the agenda. And whether, you know, organizations are doing it for tokenistic reasons or whether they're, you know, authentically passionate about it, they are taking action, and they are being asked to take action. So, in terms of being able to engage different employers, that's been fairly straightforward, I guess. It's always just trying to work out the best solution. But essentially, because we have done such a kind of, I can't take the credit, but the company has done a good job of actually encouraging young people to be transparent and vocal about the fact that they come from diverse backgrounds, and most importantly, proud of that fact. It's been quite easy for us to connect them with those employers. We're kind of nothing without the network of people that we've kind of brought in.
Oh gosh, no, it sounds like you're doing an amazing job, and especially if you've only been doing it for a year, I think you must, you know, it must be the job for you, so it sounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to ask you a little bit more personal questions now, just kind of part of you. But I just want to ask you a simple question: is what feeds your soul?
Wow, that is a good question. What feeds my soul?
It's a question I tend to ask everybody. It's one of my favourite questions, and it could be something that's quite simple. If you think of it, of what makes you laugh, if you think of it like that, when you say what feeds you, so what makes you laugh, what makes you feel good?
I guess I'd say it's just people, really. I'm very much like a people person. I'm very much like involved in the community, and like even the work that I do, I don't really kind of get satisfaction from it, or you know, even in my personal life, I don't get satisfaction unless others are involved. I'm trying to move away from the idea of me being like a people pleaser, but certainly having people around and knowing that I can help them impact or do something positive, that's what really kind of gets me going.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. That sounds lovely. I mean, how I interpret that is not that you're a people pleaser, but that you just want to help people make change, positive change. Absolutely. In their life. And it sounds to me like you're doing that, and the cause that you're working for seems like a really worthy cause. And I wish you a lot of luck with it. And now it's your chance to plug whatever you want to plug. So now I'm just going to give you the space to talk openly about whatever it is you want to plug. Off you go.
Yes, sure. Well, I guess it makes sense for me to kind of add that plug for the Bright Network. Obviously, if you're listening to this and you had young people who you're kind of wanting to go on to the kind of top careers in the country, then I'd really encourage them to sign up to Bright Network, and that's brightnetwork.co.uk. I guess we can kind of support them from there.
You know, just want to answer one question. When you say top careers, because I find that really interesting, because everybody may have a different perception. I mean, me growing up in a West Indian
background, that's so true.
I mean, I trained as a dancer, and my father didn't see that as a top.
No, you're absolutely right. That's a really important that's a really important clarification. Yeah, I think for me, and one of the reasons I work at Bright Network specifically, is that whilst I'm passionate about representation everywhere, one thing that really irked me when kind of growing up was the idea of BAME or underrepresented groups being excluded from the professions. It being deemed that they would like be becoming a lawyer or becoming a banker was too difficult or out of reach. So top's probably not the kind of best word, because like you, I studied English and drama, and I have a lot of passion for performing arts and stuff like that. But I guess I mean those professions where people of colour are most likely perhaps to be excluded.
Okay, oh, so that's interesting. That's probably just like stuff like with regards to a barrister, that sort of thing. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Or those sorts of jobs, or those sorts of
exactly. Careers.
Now that sounds absolutely amazing. I'm going to bring it to a close now, Johnson. But I think you had lots of great story there, lots of good takeaways. And as I said earlier, I feel you're doing really, really good work, and continue doing the good work. And thank you very much for sharing your story today on Real Stories. And from Tanya the Communication Doctor, I'm just going to say adios.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more Real Stories, don't forget to subscribe.